Hey, everybody. This is Andy Marquette. I am joined by my colleague and friend, Lise McTague. We are Les Geek Out. Hey, Lise, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Don't lie. How are you?
All right. Well, I had a migraine yesterday, but the pain has stopped, and I don't feel nearly so disconnected from my own brain. So it is really pretty good, comparatively speaking.
Thank you, Lise. Basically, y'all, we're all in a shit show, some more than others. But, I mean, you have us, Andy and Lise, doing Les Geek Out. That's the geekly biweekly show where we talk about fan stuff, comics, books, movies, cosplay. What am I missing, Lise? Other cool shit.
Video games.
TV, video games, like that. And so that's what we do. And we talk about feminist rep, queer rep, diversity rep, and we love that shit. And so this week, we read a webcomic, and Lise, this was Lise's fault. Lise is the one who, for once, Lise, you actually turned me onto a comics.
It doesn't happen often. Well, and it's my fault because we were going to do something else, but my iPad died, so I couldn't read the ebook that we were going to talk about.
That's okay. Good for you finding a good substitute. And that substitute is, friends, let me give you a quick intro, the webcomic Agents of the Realm.
Dun, 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 dun.
Drawn and written by Mildred Lewis, who is a fabulous artist. And I'm going to turn it over to Lise in a minute, and she can tell you all about the art stuff, because Lise herself is also a fabulous artist. And she will tell you things all about the art shit. So let's talk about first what Agents of the Realm is. And you can find it if you want to, like, you know, if you're not driving, listening to this podcast, you can find it at Agents of the Realm. That's one word. Agentsoftherealm.com. And from the website, here's the story. Shortly after starting their first year at Silver Mount University, five young women discover they've each been chosen to protect our world and a newly discovered sister dimension. Dun, dun, dun. Volume one begins at the start of their first year of college as they learn about this new responsibility and try to find out exactly what's going on. So you're going to join Nora, Adele, Kendall, Paige, and Jordan as they navigate the complexities of college and discover that they have more strength than they've ever imagined. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about Mildred Lewis. She calls herself and her pronouns are she, her, or they, them. She calls herself a jack-of-all-trades artist and comic creator. She was born and raised in Boston and is now living in Southern California. She has another web comic called Catalyst Overdrive, but Agents of the Realm, I think, is the one that most people associate with her. And she also runs Astrea's Nexus Studio, a creative venture born partially out of boredom and her natural tendency to make herself busy. Shout out to her Virgo nonsense. So she started out her little bio by saying, "I like to ignore CMYK color restrictions and make questionable creative decisions." I like her already. All right, Lise, so let's talk about Agents of the Realm. All right, I'm going to turn this over to you, and you talk about the themes and the things that go on in this comic as these young women are in college and they each discover this magical brooch that gives them powers, gives each one individual kinds of powers.
Yeah, so we start out the story following Nora, who I absolutely adore. Nora is a woman after my own heart. She
awesome.
Is a complete and total grump, and I absolutely love her for it. I really love the characterization work in the five different young women, because, you know, each of them is so different, but without really straying into tropiness or stereotypes. It's just really cool to see. I mean, there really isn't a Disney princess in the bunch. You have Nora, who's, like I said, is kind of grumpy, but she's also, like, really loyal and really there for the people who she ends up calling friends. And you have Paige, who is, like, as driven as they come. And Paige and Nora initially, like, sort of, like bang heads a little bit. I think just because they are each so strong-willed.
In different ways. Paige is like, let's give a rundown of the characters. There's Nora Tanner, okay? So she's an older freshman, actually. She took a year off from high school. She's 20. She is a woman of color. I think she identifies as Black. I think she's Black. Then there's her roommate, Adele Silveira, who is from Brazil. And mm-hmm. then there is Kendall Matthews, who's like the lone white girl from Vermont. Mm-hmm. We've got Paige Fierro, and we've got Jordan Liu. So we've got like this really diverse crew of young women. And now back to you with Nora, who we all love because she's so fucking grumpy.
Uh-huh. I mean, I think we're introduced to her, like, right off the bat. She's just like, grumble, grumble, grumble.
Oh, she is. She's like, ugh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's, like, pretty much her catchphrase is, ugh.
And with this expression, the eye roll.
Mm-hmm. And yet, she is always there whenever her friends need her, which I really love. There's a scene where, you know, it's like the end of the first semester and everyone is heading home for the holidays. And not only is Nora like bringing along one of her friends, Adele, to her home, but she also ends up like being the one who gives everyone else rides to like wherever they need to go, to the airport or where have you. And she acts so put upon the whole time, but you can also tell that she's just, I mean, I feel like she's really pleased that they're coming to her, which not only is like great character work, but it's also great work on the artist part to, you know, kind of tell us those two different stories, one in the dialogue and one in these like little characterizations that are going on the page.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
The story opens with Nora and she's going to class. It's like her first class. And so she goes and she sits in the back because she doesn't like being a center of attention. And so she mm-hmm. goes and sits in the back. And here's where you know that the shit is going to get weird because it's a mythology class. And the teacher comes in and she's like this super intense woman who I don't even know how to describe her. Like, Lise, back to you for that.
She's straight out of lesbian erotica where this, you know, the whole, like, teacher-student erotica dynamic. She is, like, right out of that, except you never get the payoff.
You didn't even do that.
Oh, yeah, she's this very severe, very, you know, by the book, like, you can tell she's gonna be a hard ass, you know, as like, a grader and with her assignments and yeah. And Nora manages to like completely fall afoul of her right off the bat.
Immediately. So the teacher's name is Ruby Blackwater. And as we find out, and this is in our universe, but as we find out in the other universe, there are five other agents of the realm. And so this universe, our universe, these five college students that happen to stumble upon these brooches and thus are granted the power of that particular brooch. They have different powers. So each individual student/agent now has a power that she never knew she had and has to like learn how to control that and work with it. Mm-hmm. And Ruby has a sister, Jade Blackwater, who's they're twins. So Ruby's kind of like, you figure out, okay, she's been corrupted. There's something not right here, but we don't quite know what she's up to. Meanwhile, Jade loves her sister in the other realm, and she's trying to save her. And she's mm-hmm. trying to do this through, we're not quite sure what rights or what wrongs that Jade is trying to fix, but she's a super crazy fixer lady. And she's just obsessed with like, driven by guilt to try to like fix something that she fucked up. And we're trying to figure out what that is. So yeah. Jade is really neurotic. I got the feeling she's just like really driven and just, you know, you were mentioning, Lise, one of the themes that this explores is, you know, these mentors in the new mm-hmm. agents' lives and how they don't, may not actually know what's best.
Yeah, there's a, I think there's a whole theme around, you know, that time that in your life when you realize that your parents aren't perfect and infallible. And I mean, obviously these aren't their parents, but they're people in positions of power and authority, and we're all taught, most of us are taught from a young age, to look up to these, you know, people in these positions. And I think, really feel like one of the themes of this comic is discovering that those people that we put on pedestals are as human as the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to, you know, a determination, like, okay, so how do I deal with this person if they are not this, like, all high and mighty person that I thought they were, but if they're just a schmo like me.
A schmo like me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about another theme that struck me as I was reading this comic. The idea of these five very different young women thrown together into these circumstances that they didn't ask for.
No.
And that they, you know, weren't necessarily looking for, but now here they are, and they understand that, you know, Nora is the first agent of the realm. She's the one who finds the first brooch and has to deal with the first breach in the dimensional, whatever boundary it is, and deal with these really crazy, scary creatures that
the bleeds.
Yeah, that come out, and then she has to, like, destroy them. So her mission, if she chooses to accept it, is to, like, kind of help find the other agents. But mm-hmm. there's this understanding that the brooches and the magic girl power that's going on here, is going to sort of guide them all together. And eventually they're all going to find each other, and they'll have to work together. Now, what plot does that sound like? I immediately thought of Debs.
I had not thought of that, but now that you've said that, that is definitely... Mm-hmm. That's topical.
You know, right? I mean, here they all take a test in Debs where they, you know, and they're thrown together into their training groups, and they have to sort of, like, learn to work together to help.
Except in Debs, I feel like, you know, they could drop out. I don't think anyone can drop out of being an agent.
No, you can't.
I mean, this really feels like a whole, like, destiny thing that you can't be like, no thanks, go on to the next. And that's something that I think all of them, all of the girls, all of the women have to deal with in one way or another, mm-hmm. is what do I do with this thing that's been thrust upon me that I never asked for? And, you know, in some cases, it's completely counter to, like, something that they would seek out. And yet they're the ones who have to deal with it. You know, there's nobody else to take it on. It's them or it's no one.
And that puts them in an interesting position, because they end up having to work together in ways that they never expected, and probably in a perfect world, or in their normal world without this magical power, they wouldn't hang out at all together, mm-hmm. except for Nora and Adele, because they're roommates.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, Paige is consumed with doing well in school. Kendall, I'm not actually sure what Kendall's deal is. She's just kind of floating around out there. And Jordan is, you know, sort of the odd one out, because she comes into the group completely differently than the other four. The other four sort of find themselves. But Jordan gets found by Ruby. And uh-huh. Ruby is not on the up and up.
No, she tries to, like, turn her against the other agents.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, and fortunately... Well, I don't want to get too spoilery, but, you know, so mm-hmm. she does end up with the group, but, you know, it's sort of, okay, that's, you know, how much can you trust her? Not that she would necessarily do anything on purpose, but she's already been fooled once, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, so yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic, and these women are just so different from each other, and from all different backgrounds. I mean, you really see that on the... In the portion where they're going home
for break, mm-hmm. yeah, and that's such a college experience. You know, you're going home from break, and Adele ends up going to Nora's house because Adele's from Brazil, so mm-hmm. you know, it's easier for her to just spend time with one of her friends than to try to get back to Brazil. And we find out a lot about the backgrounds of the different characters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got some dysfunction there. We've got some, which again, harkens back to your theme of authority figures not always being the kind, supportive mentor and parents certainly not always being the good, supportive parents. We find out some of the characters, I don't want to get real spoilery either, we find out some of the characters have like some not so great home situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, not all of them. Some of them come from great home situations. Mm-hmm. But some of them, yeah, you don't, I would not want to be in their shoes. Those are some really sucky situations to deal with.
Yeah. And it really speaks to how these characters and the characterization mm-hmm. that, you know, we're dealing with young women who are in college and nobody comes from like an awesomely perfect home situation. Some are healthier than others.
Right.
And some are like really fucked up. And each of these young women is coming from very different backgrounds. And we don't know much about obviously Adele's home situation because she didn't go home for the break. But we find out, you know, a little bit more about how each of them interacts with their families and each other. And we also find out, you know, one of the other themes, there is queer rep in this comic. We've got a couple characters who, one of whom is, well, Jordan mm-hmm. is attracted to women. I don't know if she identifies as lesbian or bi or pan. And then we've got Adele, who seems to be clearly straight identified, but we're mm-hmm. not sure. You know, she could be bi as well. We don't know.
Yeah.
But the thing that's cool, and this was mentioned on the about page or on the question and answer page of the website, is that yes, there's queer rep, but it's just part of who the characters are. It's not something that there's no journey here to discovering that you're queer. It's just that mm-hmm. they are, and, you know, Jordan has a crush on another young woman, and it's just part of the story. And I like how the other agents, when Jordan is interacting with Mackenzie, how the other agents are like, oh my God, that's so cute.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're shipping that so hard.
So cute.
Yeah, no, I really like it, and it's so organic and natural. You know, there's no attention drawn out to it because none needs to be. This is just a natural offshoot of learning about these women's lives, is we find out who they're interested in and they're interested in them, and then we move on with our lives. So yeah, it's really nice that it's not remarked upon, and it's not a major point of angst, you know? Mm-hmm. We're not having a queer relationship so that the straight people can hate them and then it can become somebody else's growth point. It is what it is.
I want to talk about that for a minute. One of the things that I really find joy in stories like this is that it's not another coming out story.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've noticed a shift in, especially as we move into these new decades and new generations of young queer people, is that these are people who, thank God, they don't have to go through that to the extent mm-hmm. that we did. Now, I'm not suggesting at all that young queer people are not going through a coming out. They're not going through an angst. But I love seeing stories where being queer is just part of who the person is. And mm-hmm. their friends are accepting of it. And like, we have that scene here where Jordan is talking to her crush interest, and they're trying, who is really pissed at her because she's been ghosting her and hasn't been forthright. And so they like are locked in a dorm room that the rest of them can't get into. So they're all out in the hall waiting mm-hmm. for them to finish their conversation. And the way the friends are all like, no, we have to give them space. It's not about, oh, these queers, we have to give the queers space. It's about, oh my God, they're working out this, this relationship thing and we'll just be out here.
Right.
It's like the same thing that would happen if Jordan was straight and with a dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, and not that coming out stories aren't important, but it felt like for a long time, you know, we got two kinds of stories, which were the coming out stories and then the stories where we got punished for being queer.
Mm, yes. And those are the major tropes.
Mm-hmm. And now we get to tell other stories that aren't just related to those two, and which is great because, you know, I like seeing queer people being happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we deserve to see that, and we need to see more of it. And it's, you know, strips like these that really help normalize that, yeah, this is just a part of what people are like.
I like that it was just no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
to the other agents. They're just like, whatever. And you know, think about how cute it is when Jordan and Mackenzie, right? I'm pretty sure that was her name.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where they're interacting and like, you know, they all have like heart eyes and they're all going, oh.
You know? Like, that's great.
Like that was something that would never have happened for me in high school or college.
Mm-hmm.
Like never have happened. And I just love that Mildred Lewis like really just normalized it. It is a part, yeah, of who each of these characters is, those who are queer, who identify as such. And the other characters are like, yeah, cool. Awesome. Like, oh my God, they're having a talk. We'll just be out here in the hall, like,
uh-huh,
you know, and it's not a, you know, it was just like, yeah, okay. I love that. I have to tell you, I just love seeing that kind of thing where it's just part of the character and it's a relationship like other characters would have.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I like that we get to tell more stories about our people than just the ones that we're told are the important ones.
Right. And here she is. She's part of a team and, mm-hmm, and they're going to have to save the realms, the dimensions, and we find out, you know, that Jade is also queer and she's married to a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yep, I was like,
who was keeping her from just completely and totally self-combusting
from melting down because she's trying so hard to fix whatever it is that she did or thinks she did.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little bit about, please, this is your bailiwick art. Dun dun
dun dun dun.
So does Mildred Lewis ignore color palettes and just make bad creative decisions?
Well, so one of the things that I like about this strip is that it is very colorful.
Mm-hmm.
Though looking through it, I mean, I don't see that she's ignoring color palettes. I'm seeing a very sort of clear color palette that is kind of threading through. But it is an unusual one, and I'm really enjoying just the use of a vibrant color. You know, that is something that we don't necessarily see a whole lot all the time. I also really like the layouts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just different and unusual from page to page, and so you don't feel like you're seeing like the same thing over and over again, which is cool. One thing I really love, so I don't know if you noticed this, but every character's speech bubbles are in a different color.
Yes, I did notice that.
Yeah.
Look at me noticing art stuff.
So I just think that's really cool. It's a really nice, clean way of showing who's talking. And I think it really simplifies like certain scenes, especially because, I mean, we have an ensemble cast of five people and right, all five of them are there and talking a lot of the time. And so it's really nice to just be like, okay, wait, who's saying that? Oh, that's that color, so it must be Nora. Or, oh, no, that's definitely Paige.
I appreciated that, too. You know, you don't often get that in a comic where you, and it, like you say, it's an ensemble cast where oftentimes all five of them are in the same space and, mm-hmm, talking and, you know, or as it's more typical, bantering and or arguing.
Yes.
So you get a sense of not just from the way each of the characters talks and the things that they say, but also it just made it a lot easier to like move quickly through the panels. Mm-hmm. And I do like how she set up the panels. Like, it just seemed like a really nice flow was set up through the panels, mm-hmm. and the dialogue and how she delineated different people speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, you were worried about having to read a webcomic, and I was like, don't worry. It's a really fast read.
Well, I was like, because, you know, I always come in late. I always come in late, and it's like, oh, there's only like, you know, 2,000 episodes. And I'm just like, ah!
Well, this is only like 417 odd pages or something.
Which, with a comic, y'all, is not really that big a deal. Mm-hmm. Unless you like to like kind of linger. Like some of the pages I did linger over, like descriptions and kind of looking at how she had positioned the characters and, you know, the different powers that each of them has when they mm-hmm. act. It's like the Wonder Twins when they activate to go into battle. You know, they each have a different weapon.
They do. And a sort of a different like specialty. Like Nora has the sword and the shield. And so she really ends up being a lot about defense.
She-Ra.
Mm-hmm. But she, you know, she's there to like, you know, defend her fellow teammates from being attacked by these bleeds, mm-hmm. which is really cool.
That's what they call them, friends. Bleeds. Like, you know, if you're into Pacific Rim, it's called a breach when the monster comes in from the other world. Here it's a bleed. It bleeds into your world.
Yeah. But yeah, so Nora has the sword and the shield. Adele has a pole arm. Kendall has a bludgeon, which also does weird magic-y stuff that I don't think she's always real sure.
She's not real sure.
What's going to come out of it? Yeah.
She's never sure.
Paige has a bow and an arrow, which, you know, that's always my favorite. I'm partial to plinking it away from a distance. And then Jordan gets these chained blades, which are just super freaking cool.
Those are kind of cool, but I'm kind of surprised that Paige got the bow and arrow. You know, because she's so intense and like, dare I say, straight laced about, you know, everything is, I have to do X, Y, Z. And then she gets a bow and arrow, which is, to me, you know, I'm always thinking Katniss Everdeen. And I'm always thinking, you know, like how fast those arrows can fly. And you have to kind of like just let go of your conscious thoughts and just battle. Mm-hmm. And here's Paige having to battle with this. I found that really interesting given her overall character. And I would love to ask Mildred if she like kind of matched each character to each weapon for reasons that I'm not quite clear on yet. Because I don't know, it was interesting. And so they get like those costumes that they, you know, they activate their magic girl powers, mm-hmm. and they each have like different costumes. So they sort of look kind of superhero-ish.
Kind of superheroish, but there's also sort of a bit of a ballet vibe, if you know what I mean. Like they're
do tell, please.
Well, they're sort of tutu-esque in some ways. It's like they have that poofy skirt, that poofy short skirt.
Yeah, what is that about?
That comes out.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. You know, because mm-hmm. I was reading through and I was like, okay, so that's the one thing that I'm not really sure about in this is, you know, how effective are those as superhero clothes? I don't know.
Right. What they kind of remind me of, though, like with the styling and the colors is Voltron.
Oh, God, that's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a shout out to Voltron. That could be.
Yeah, or that kind of you know, just. That whole trope with the, of course they don't, you know, form this like giant monster thing when they all get together, but you know, just that visual look. And it's interesting because, you know, we get some like flashbacks or flash sideways or what have you, where we get to see the agents in the other realm, mm-hmm. and their aesthetic is not at all like what it is in this realm.
Yeah, and they're older too.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. And, you know, thinking about it, running around in sort of like the tutu with kind of the boots, Mm-hmm. Kind of does free up your legs. You can, you know, move around. It's sort of like a Harley Quinn thing. It's something that I would totally see Harley Quinn wearing. You know, it's sort of a weird tutu with big old boots.
Yep.
Did you have any other themes that you wanted to explore? We talked about the adults not being mentorish in all respects, mm-hmm. about young women finding themselves within teamwork.
Sure. I mean, you know, just there's a lot to be said about the whole, like, you know, coming of age stuff, which I think just happens naturally with stories that are told about characters these ages. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you cannot have that be a part of it. And so, that, you know, there's definitely that, but I feel like there's just a lot more, you know, that whole navigating a destiny that you didn't know was, A, was there, and B, don't want. And then, yes, learning about the fallibility of people that are that may be on pedestals, whether you put them there or not.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about one of the scenes in which all five of the young women are together in their dorm room, and Jade Blackwater is communicating with them through the meeting. I think it's through their screen. They have like a thing,
mm-hmm. like a hollow projector,
like a hollow thing, like, yeah. A hollow projector thing, and Jade is saying like shit that just is not sitting well with the young women.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she's just basically like just tearing them up one side and down the other for not doing as well as she thinks they should be, or as well as she wishes they would.
I think that's, yeah, that's key.
Yeah. And Paige is like, just like, nuh-uh, I'm not doing this.
Paige is sort of like the den mother, you know, uh-huh. of you know, she's young. She's younger than Nora. She's 18. But she's all like, yeah, this is no. And then, you know, when Paige says that, like, it kind of makes the other young women look at Jade and go, we're doing the best we can. None of us wanted this.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like there's a training manual or they're getting any actual training. They just keep on being thrown into these confrontations with these bleeds. It's like, it's just a thing that keeps happening. And yet Jade, I mean, and, you know, Jade is operating under a couple of things, which it's understandable that she feels this way. But it's not okay for her to unload on these people who don't know what they're doing, haven't been trained. When Jade grew up around agents, mm-hmm. and is also trying to exercise her own burdens, none of which the girls at this point know anything about.
Yeah, and I love that scene. I loved how, you know, these young women are like, you know what, you're kind of full of shit right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're doing the best we can with what we have, and it's not like you've been the best guide. And they kind of said that. It's not like you've mm-hmm. been the best guide.
Right.
In this. So I really enjoy that Mildred brought that in, that element of these young women, that they're not just learning how to work with each other, but they're standing up for themselves and for each other in the face of an adult authority figure who's supposed to be, you know, kind of a mentor kind of person. And I just really appreciated that here's young women speaking out in defense of themselves and each other.
Mm-hmm.
Really liked that element.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
That was like one of my favorite scenes, I think. Okay, yeah, sure. Jordan's cute with her girlfriend, but but did you have any final thoughts on the awesome?
It is the awesome, and I'm so glad I found it because.
How did you find it?
I went looking for webcomics by Black artists.
I want to, like,
because my webcomics are as unfortunately whitewashed as the rest of the stuff that I, you know, consume without thinking. So
let's do a shout out to, like, well, not a shout out, but just like an acknowledgement that last show, friends, Lisa and I were talking about how we're trying to decolonize our, you know, metaphorical and literal bookshelves. Mm-hmm. And so we've been making a lot more efforts to seek out artists of color, books that are done by writers of color, comics that have writers of color doing them and or include people of color as characters. And so I'm really glad that Lee's found this one, because it was a lot of fun. And right now I know Mildred's on a hiatus, a little bit of a hiatus, and hopefully she'll crank up again, because I want to know what happens after Christmas break. So thanks, Lise. Did you just do a search, Black comics, or?
Yeah, I did. There are some lists out there. I was looking for one that was somewhat, current. Like you said, Mildred's on hiatus, but that's as of June of this year. So I wanted one that was still going, because one thing I love about webcomics is that regular update.
Yeah, those are always fun. And I think I'm actually gonna Mildred has a tip jar, that you can give a little donation to. I think I'm gonna give her some money, because I really appreciate artists sharing their work for quote unquote free. But I feel like if there's a tip jar, I'm gonna tip them, because this, I think that's our responsibility as consumers of art, that we support artists in any way that we can. And if you are able, if you have the resources and you read this webcomic, please do tip Mildred, because she puts a lot of heart and soul into these comics, you can tell. And it's just it's legit. So freaking give her some cash. Swing her some cash. So, final thoughts on The Awesome?
That's it.
Besides, read it!
Yes, read it.
Coolio. All right, Lise, how about we do shout-outs? What's yours this week?
Well, you said I have to talk about my new release, so...
Oh, that was going to be my shout-out, but okay, go ahead. Lise is shouting out herself, y'all. This is awesome.
I know, this is such growth for me.
It really is.
Grudgingly and with poor grace. No. I am kind of stoked about this, though, because this is my very first audiobook.
Woo!
And yeah, and it's the audiobook version of Five Moons Rising, dropped today as we're recording this. So by the time this goes up, it'll have been out a few days. And it's recorded by Lori Prince, who, oh my God, sounded amazing.
Yeah, I know who Lori Prince is, because I've listened to some of her work. Really cool.
Yes. And she made me blush in one of the parts that she chose for the audio, because it was a sexy times portion. And I've never heard those out loud before. So
it makes a difference, doesn't it?
It really does. And I was in the car with my wife, and I was like, oh my. But yeah, so check it out, Five Moons Rising. It is a lesbian paranormal with an enemies to lovers storyline, and it features werewolves and the super soldiers created to destroy them.
Awesome. Wow. Y'all, I was actually gonna force Lise to talk about it by saying that was my shout out this week. Because Lise is so, I don't know, humble, shy, anxiety ridden. I don't know.
Anxiety ridden.
But it's hard to get Lise to talk about her work, friends. So I'm always really excited when she drops a book or when there's a new format released, and then I can force her into a position where she has to tell us about it. And and she just did. So yay and congratulations. Five Moons Rising audiobook, friends. Look for it. And I will supply a link so that if y'all are into those audiobooks, we can hook you up with that. Okay.
Yeah, and the sequel, Hunter's Descent, is in production.
Oh no, let me write that down right now. Holy crap, this is amazing.
I'm not sure exactly when it'll be out, but I know that they're recording it because they had a whole mess of things that they needed pronunciations on. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I know how to pronounce
this. Can I ask what company did this?
Tantor Media.
Okay, friends. If you're not familiar with Tantor audiobooks, they've been working with a lot of lesbian houses. and mm-hmm. they're trying to really beef up their LGBTQ audiobook list. I think it's something they're really committed to. So if you can like try to buy your audiobooks from them, that would be great. I think they sell on all the platforms worldwide. So, yeah. You know, support, like I said, if you can support artists and the awesome publishers that support them too. So that was half my shout out. Lisa's new audiobook. Woohoo!
I'm sorry I stole your shout out.
That's cool. Okay, so my shout out, friends, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but like 3 months ago, I decided I would try like this. It's not really a board game, but it kind of is. It's called Hunt a Killer. And the company has like different murders, you know, fake murders that you solve. And you bring in as many people as you want to work on various clues. And what they do is, depending on what kind of subscription you buy, that every month I get a box from Hunt a Killer that has to do with the case I'm working on. And in that box are clues. Like I'm working on the case right now that is about a young woman who was murdered in 1934. And she was an actress, and this murder occurred in the theater where she was working. And so there are, you know, you get like these really cool clues. Like you get a play program from the 30s with like bios of all the stars. You get like, sometimes the clues will include like a police report when she was declared missing. We got an autopsy report because her body was discovered 80 years later in a trunk in the theater's attic. So what you do is, you know, you get a letter from the current theater's owner. You know, it's all fake, but it's like a reality show kind of. So, and you communicate directly with the quote unquote theater owner. And once you figure out each month's thing that you're supposed to figure out, and then you write, you email her and you say, hey, we discovered that so-and-so is blah, 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 or whatever the clue is. I've been working on this with my mom, who is a huge mystery buff. And she's having the best time. And the two of us, like on Saturday, we spent like 6 hours working on the second box of clues. And we figured out what we had to figure out. And I got to email them and tell them what's up. And then they'll send us our third box. But what you're trying to do is solve the murder of this woman. And there are different kinds of, there's different cases. I chose this one because I like cold cases like from that era. And because my mom is actually a retired, she's one of the things that she did in her life was she was a director of plays and she worked in community theater. That was one of the myriad things that she did. And I figured she would get a kick out of doing this. And I was right. So we've been having a blast, like on the weekends, like working on this case and trying to figure out who murdered Viola Vane, the up and coming stage actress. It's been a lot of fun. So if you're looking for something different, that's it kind of engages depending on what case you get. There are like portfolios online that you go to with additional documents and clues, but it doesn't like you're not on social media. So if you want a break from that and you want to just kind of do stuff with your family and friends, like, you know, work on solving something together, I highly recommend Hunt a Killer. So it may be a little pricey for some of you, but if you like band together, say with a group of friends, you can like buy a 6-month subscription to solve a particular case. So
ooh, that's a really good idea.
It's been a blast. I mean, it's been so much fun, like looking through these documents that are, you know, they're fake, but they're pretty realistic overall. Mm-hmm. And so we've just been having a really good time, kind of like, you know, keeping records. We have files. we have our notebooks.
Ooh, are you going to get one of those like big bulletin boards?
We thought about it, but I was like, let's just do this first case and see how it goes. And then we'll go from there. And if we decide to do another one, and we may, but if we do another one, I want it to be more the historic because I like the historical era better than more recent stuff because it kind of like removes you from the realm of like, oh, this is too close to comfort, you know?
Right.
So yeah, we've been, it's been a lot of fun, y'all. So if you, your friends, family, whatever, if you have disposable income or if you want to like, kind of like, you know, band together, I think it's like for 6 months, depending on the case, the average is like $120. But I think there are coupons that you can get to knock off like 10, 20%. And if you can get 10 people, I mean, that's doable, right? To get a 6 month subscription and then you can all like kind of work together on it. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. That's my shout out to Hunt a Killer. Thanks guys for getting me offline.
Yeah, no, which is, it takes some doing these days.
Exactly. Lee's final words. He's just thinking deeply.
Well, I am. Cause
yeah.
Yeah.
Cause shit.
It's cause there's a lot of shit going on right now. And what do I address? No, I want to go back to, you know, real quick, like our efforts to decolonize our mm-hmm. bookshelves, both real and virtual. And in some ways it's harder than I expected, but it's really rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah, I have to do some research. I have to look for stuff. I have to be intentional about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm not intentional about it, I end up reading the same stuff I've been reading and watching the same stuff I've been watching the whole time. So it's been an interesting experience to just really sort of interrogate, like, why am I reading what I'm reading and why am I not reading this? And then to make some changes about it. And I'm really glad I have, because I'm really enjoying this completely new realm, new realms,
mm-hmm.
no pun intended, for our thing this week. But, you know, just new realms of fiction, and seeing fiction through other people's lenses is so much more interesting than seeing it through the same lens I've been seeing it for 40 years.
That's really true. I'm thinking here of Robin DiAngelo, who wrote the book White Fragility and does a lot of training on getting white people out of their comfort zones and to really confront the racism in their own lives and in their own upbringings, because we are all indoctrinated mm-hmm. into this white supremacist system. That, I mean, that's a reality. And for white people, especially, I saw a tweet, I can't remember who did this, so please forgive me, but he noted that, you know, think about having the privilege to interrogate your privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people who are not white or do not have privilege can't do that. They have to survive. They're like in survival mode, especially right now. So we, Lees, are actually privileged because we are able to interrogate our privilege and to start trying to decolonize our media and hopefully our minds. And I think about that, what that guy said, quite a bit, like, wow. That he's so right. So how do I not only do that, but also support, you know, engage and stay involved? And it's really fucking hard. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie and say, oh, it's so great. I'm just going to have a white lady book club and everything will be great. I'm not suggesting that, because every time I look at things that are not what my usual fare have been, I force myself to really think about the fact, you know, about the artists behind this and what are their lives like and how can I support them not only by reading, but by mm-hmm. getting the word out and if I can financially, you know, paying for their work and demonstrating that there's a much wider demographic here who would appreciate this, because, you know, there's a big discussion, as you've seen, about publishing and mm-hmm. locking people of color out because, oh, there's not a market for it. Well, I disagree. I think there is a market for it. And so how can I help enact that?
Yeah.
So these are some of the questions I've been asking myself. And I'm really glad that you and I really started working on this, on thinking about and interrogating our lives and ourselves and the media we've been consuming.
Me too.
Whew. Anyway, friends, thank you. This has been Les Geek Out with me, Andy Marquette, and over there, Lees McTagg. Yay, Lees! Audiobook, woo! You can find us at our website, lesgeekoutcast.com, and you can also find the podcast on all the places, all the platforms. Excuse me. Please like and subscribe. Help others to find us. And if you have ideas, let us know. You can hit us up on Twitter. We have a Twitter account, LGO Podcast. Or you can hit up Lise, who is at the strangely named at Lise McTague, or me at Andy Marquette. Very cryptic. Drop us a line. Tell us how you're doing. If you have ideas, let us know. Any media you've consumed and you love, let us know about it. We would love to hear about it. So thanks, everybody. Please take care of yourselves and stay safe. And we will get back with you in a couple weeks. Bye. That was deep. We got really deep. Was that deep enough?
We did.
Maybe it wasn't deep enough.
We should get deep. This stuff, I think...
it's important.
It is.
So important.
I want to give it its due diligence because it's been... it hasn't been given for far too long.
It has not. And... you know, it's not like the media doesn't exist. That's the thing.
Right.
I am willing to do the work to find it and to promote it. But it's, you know, it's just like, I just keep thinking, God, how have I not been doing this? This is nuts. Jesus. Mm-hmm. Because there's such good stories out there that yep. I've been, like, indoctrinated to not engage with. Mm-hmm. And I'm really pissed off about it.
Yeah. I mean, I could have been reading this for like the past 30 years.
Yeah. Fuck. And telling, you know, all my white friends, please read this shit so that we could start breaking down some more barriers and making sure that my friends of color know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that they have the representation that you and I are so used to getting. I mean, but that guy was right. I wish I could think of his name about how, you know, it is white privilege to be able to interrogate our own whiteness. And that just really stuck with me. And I think about that every day.